fraud. And then all the psychiatric drugs, the antidepressive, Zoloft, Paxil, Effexor, and Prozac, and how it was actually causing suicide and how it wasn't helping anyone. And there was no science behind it. There is no such thing as a brain chemical imbalance. And but no one wanted to deal with this because it's a very powerful industry. Big advertising. You look on television, see how many ads are for drugs. So I began to see the cooperation of major.
Well, we're going to break away from our fundraising schedule for a different fundraising schedule. Yes, no doubt. Whenever you turn on your radio to WBAI, except this moment, you will likely hear Gary Null. But right now, it's time for our regularly scheduled program, Night Shift, with Mike Sargent and the crew. This is WBAI New York.
And you're tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI, 99.5 FM in New York and on the web at WBAI.org. The name of the show is Night Shift, 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 is Night Shift.
Hey, come on. All I really want for Christmas is to be a little bit more conscious. I don't really ever look expensive and dear. Shelly, do you really want to deal in Kwanzaa? I'm a rockamuffin in a debt differently. Come have a happy new year. Hey, now this is the season. Don't lick on the cup in reason. All my roughneck take a set bread. This is not a joke, and I beg you don't laugh and choke, but there's a few things we have to make clear. Now all I really want for Christmas is to be a little bit more conscious. I don't really ever look expensive and dear. Hey, Shawnee, do you really want to deal in Kwanzaa? I'm a ragamuffin in a debt differently.
But here's my thought, Byron. Everything you just said about, you know, humanity and where we're headed now and you know, we're at a precipice where the coming government and the coming change in philosophy about the planet, not just class, not just money, not just Social Security, but climate, you know, everything. There are predictions that we will have depleted all seafood supply by 2048. Have you read about this? You heard about this? There's a whole article. But anyway, so all kinds of things are at play. We could provoke nuclear war. We could completely drastically have flooding and things because we're really on a global level can affect the climate. If we don't stop what we're doing, it will change things. So many things can happen in the next 4 to 8 years that would take decades to overcome. Now, we talked about, your position is that the nature of things, way beyond what humanity does, is to self-correct, to in some way compensate. So clearly, yes, nature will survive, the planet will survive, it'll be different, it'll be altered because of the species that became dominant on it. But here's my question, and the question I asked you was, what's the cost if 60% of the planet has to die for whether it's famine or disease or any number of issues, extreme poverty, who knows? Okay, who knows what could happen in the, let's just say, man-made apocalypse for human life? All the number of things that could happen in the next literally 5 to 15 years, okay, to affect the population incredibly. So the question is, what's the cost then? If it's going to self-correct, what does that cost? And my question then to you is, Byron, if that 40% is what's left, they clearly will have learned for what the 60% that is gone didn't, you know, benefit from, and they will learn from this. They'll look back on where we're at now and go, wow, you know, humanity in its history had a chance to change and self-correct, but it didn't, and nature did what it did, and blah, 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 blah. So here's my question. You get what my question is there. You get my question. Talk about self-correction, the nature. And is it the nature of human beings to self-correct is my question? And more importantly, most human beings need to hit bottom. You know, they need to, let's just say they learn the hard way. And as a whole, let's just say the dominating forces of humanity, governments, economies that are dominating what's going to happen planet-wide in terms of their philosophy. If they're representative of human beings, what part of humanity is it? The humanity that has to learn the hard way that, like, wow, you know, greed and corruption and capitalism and everything took over in place of all the spirituality that we need as human beings to really exist. Like, we missed it. Like, we didn't get it. We have to be in harmony with the planet. We missed that. But those of us who are left are going to get there. So is that what you see? Or do you see some sort of self-correction? Do you see, like, no, we will avert utter planet-wide havoc and things will be bright and sunny? What is your prediction? And why?
First and foremost, the spiritual place where I come from, where it's the origins of thought, of the concept of life itself, in the manner in which I prescribe to, it is always a point of reference to me that because I'm always challenging the direction and the focus of the I guess you say, humanity that I represent. Having said that, it's a way of life and knowing that you can overcome all that is against you. I never stop believing in the concept of what I know is a proper way of living, and that's one of nonviolence, that is one of not participating in any aggressive kind of character which would say, I'm bullying you. You cannot go through life trying to overcome everything that life is by trying to make it your way. If you do that, and it's not just by party, it's by your individual way of you try to live your life. If you try to discipline upon your life, it's going to fail because your life is not perfect. It's about how you live in harmony with all the elements that are coming to you. Because in harmony and peace, you can overcome all that negative stuff that keeps generating and fueling the confrontation. Yes, we are in a confrontational period, but can you overcome it? And I'm challenging you. Do you have to always go to war to overcome the confrontation? Because that's the point at which we must all confront. Because at this point, we're pushing elements that want to go to war. You know it. You see it with China. Trump with China is trying to push a war. Then yes, would fuel our economy because we've been there, done that before. World War II was how our economy got established. And yes, it can go to heights of unbelievable wealth. But at the end of the day, will it bring world peace? And that's the challenge that we must be, and we are confronted with, because bringing world peace does not mean always going to war. Going to war to bring world peace is it's anathema. It is contradictory to each other, because you cannot create peace with war. You can only create war and hatred and more vulnerability to continuing hatred so that war fuels itself. But if you're really trying to use war to establish peace, then you're really using the wrong method, because war will only put somebody in a submersive position. It's about creating slavery, and slavery does not work.
Okay, two things, Byron. Yes. Yeah, just to bring you back on point here. Everything you said, is beautiful, and I agree with 100%. But you know, I'm going to ask my same question, but a second question. You know, is peace the agenda? Okay, and coming back to my original question, do you see logic, good self-correction coming? Or do you think, is it going to be a higher cost, like that 60%, to really wake humanity up? And when I say humanity up, I'm meaning like us to get to a point where we recognize that we have to divide all borders and realize we're human. You know, whether it takes the aliens or coming or whatever. Like, I mean, if we're all about the survival of the species, we have to have, you know, things in place for the species to survive. It's not about those profiting, whatever. Everybody should be trying to do what they want to do, but the species, the planet, you with me, the place we live, if Earth is our apartment, you know, we have to keep that apart. Like, you can't just, you know, overload your electricity in your apartment and just keep blowing circuits and not think that this is going to be a cost. You understand what I'm saying, right? So, my question is, again, just to encapsulate, is peace the agenda, and do you see the big cost, or do you see a self-correcting?
Peace is the only agenda. And stop thinking of it just as peace. Think of it as harmony. The balance of life is that, yes, there must be good and evil, but can the balance of life exist coexistently on a plane that balances each other out, because it's a yin and a yang of life? You're always going to be challenging each other, but the challenge of each other is about moving the life forward, the life force forward. And if it continues to move forward, not stand still, because the negative wants to stand still, the positive wants to keep moving it forward. The positive says, come on, work with me. We can have fun enjoying how we're going to challenge each other to make it right. Prove to me that your side is right. I'm not convinced that your side is the right way.
So you think at the end of the day, yes, peace, or as you say, harmony, is the agenda.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So, yeah. That being said, then, this is your belief about, I'm assuming, humanity. That's your belief. Like, at the end of the day, you know, when Putin and Trump go to bed, they're thinking, like, we really want world peace. Okay,
yeah,
so I'm going with that.
I would challenge that thought, but that's okay,
well,
too.
That's kind of
that's part
saying,
of the game plan.
Or part of the, you know, or those who want peace are, like, clearly,
yeah,
outweighing, well, to,
I
hell,
can tell you, we
to
do,
hell with those guys.
I can tell you about that storyline, too, because that's a part of it, but that's okay.
I'm talking big picture here. So,
I am talking
so
big
picture.
Picture.
So you believe,
yes,
that peace is always the agenda, that at the
must
end of the
be.
Day, at the end of the day, we all want harmony. That's
must
what you believe.
Be.
And no, I'm not asking must be.
Must be.
Dude. Okay, must be. But so your
otherwise
belief.
Otherwise, you're going to acquiesce to the negative?
Dude, I'm not
I don't
arguing.
Believe that.
I'm not arguing the logic of peace being the agenda. The question is, the specific question, not your belief, the question to you is, I'm assuming what you're saying is that, yes, peace ultimately is the agenda of all the world powers. Is that what you're saying? Harmony.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying? Okay, good.
Yes.
Fine. So, that being said, okay.
I broke it down to good versus evil. Because positive
I'm
versus negative.
Listen, I'm with that.
Now, what part of that... in terms of the sciences that are available to discover which side is which is the best part. But I think in the essence of the life form that we exist, the positive aspect continues to say that I can always find a cure or a method to keep moving us forward. Otherwise, why do I even exist?
So like
my
Jurassic Park,
is,
life will find a way? Is that true?
Well, and ultimately, because it will mutate to what it has to do to sustain its life. Otherwise, will it become extinct?
So
That's a finality
you have
to accept.
So you're still not answering me. I mean, I buy the whole mutation. Listen,
I just did.
I buy with you. We're clearly mutating. You know, the government is mutating. But wait, here's my question. My question is... And maybe you've answered it because you answered in the Byron way, in the Byron way, and I may not have understood, but so you're saying you believe...
Replay.
It's not going to be the harsh 60%. You believe in the more positive view that it will self-correct. That's what you're saying?
I am saying, yes, the self-correcting...
That's a yes or no question, Byron.
I just said,
which,
yes.
Which is it?
I am
is it
saying...
Door number one?
I go with where...
Or door number two.
I go with where Carol Merrill is standing, because she's the one on Price is Right, and she's so beautiful. So I'm going to go with where she's standing. She could be a door number one, two, or three, but I'm going to go with Carol Merrill. Now, how about that? That's a Byron answer, see?
That's a very Byron answer.
Anyway, having chosen Carol Merrill, I will say this. I'm satisfied that what we are looking for with respect to finding a balance in everything that exists is to find, yes, peace in the moment. Everything is about peace. Because you have to find that in order to
sustain
yourself.
Okay, so are you saying, this is the yes or no part, Byron?
I said yes or no tonight.
Okay, all right. So yes, you see the positive, more positive, not the 60%. Okay, all right. Okay. That's good to know, Byron. I vote for you.
I'm not running for office.
All right, but I do want to say one thing. Do you agree with this?
Yes.
I think that no matter how you look at it, right now, even this conversation we're having, public radio, free speech radio, unbiased media that is not bought. You know, we live in a time of where if you're on the right, you watch Fox. If you're on the left, you watch CNN. So we accept that the news is biased towards one political party or another. And public radio, I think, is the last place, public broadcasting, TV, public, all of it, is the last place where you can have unbiased. Because if money is controlling everything now, that means that what controls public radio, and especially a place like WBAI, is the people who support it.
Right.
So that's why we're saying we want you to pledge and go on to the Facebook page, and there's a link right there, and you become a BAI buddy, okay? You can become a BAI buddy right there, and that means $10 a month, okay? And you are just supporting BAI just like you do everything else you support. But again, I believe that public radio, Byron, is going to become more relevant in the future than ever.
Well, here's the deal. Especially with a station like WBAI 99.5 FM, is that you're given...
And on the web at WBAI.org.
You're given a chance to hear an alternative opinion. Now, we may not all be right on Night Shift, but we give you...
What are you talking about, Byron?
Well, for me and my, especially as I assess what I bring to the table.
You're not right? Is that what you're saying?
That's been challenged for many, many years, over 15, I believe. So anyway, the truth of the matter is this, is that as we talk about BAI and we're able to tell you about Night Shift and have a little kind of craziness, but address some of the main issues that we are confronted with. And that's what's made it a very successful program over all the years, Mike. So I have...
You're the crazy one now.
I'm the hired fool. I'm supposed to write this stuff, as we say, and I keep an archive that's amazing.
NITESHIFT. It's on Facebook. You go there right now. You can pledge and become a BAI buddy during the show, but because it's going to take you to WBAI.org website where you can make your pledge, okay, and just become a BAI buddy. Come on. Listen, if we can get 15 per show, we're doing good, Byron. 15 people say, yeah, it's worth $10 a month.
Night Shift. It's my favorite show. Oh, my goodness, yes. Now, you know you want to support this. Come on now. Thank you.
Now, let me ask you, Byron, you started to say something about public radio and the importance and why BAI and places like this, unbiased information and news and reporting and programming, that is not dictated by the political views of the corporation that finances.
Well, as I was saying, the thing is, you may not agree with us, but we're going to challenge you to think about some things that are critically important to the survival of your life.
Critical thinking.
But we're going to have some fun along the way because life is a comedy. Life is like science fiction. And if you don't know that about Night Shift...
I don't know if life is a comedy anymore, no matter.
But life is like science fiction?
Yes, it is absolutely like science fiction.
Thank you very
much. Right now, we're in a George Orwell novel.
That's why I'm saying Big Brother and Big Sister and Big Mama and Big Daddy.
Big Mama is watching.
Yes, and we need your support, all of y'all. Come on. Make it real.
That's
for
right.
All
go
of us.
Right. To, go right to the page. Just go to the Facebook page. NITESHIFT. You can like us if you want, but just go. There's a link right there, right now, where you can pledge and become. It'll take you to the WBAI.org page, our program page for Night Shift, N-I-T-E-S-H-I-F-T, if you don't know how to spell it. All right, and when you get there, at the bottom, where it gives a description of Byron and the show, at the bottom it says... You can become a BAI buddy in the name of this show. Become a BAI buddy in the name of Night Shift.
Night Shift. It's my favorite show.
And this is going to be a Night Shift Christmas special. It's a Christmas music special, what I call Christmas DGM. It's actually going to be partially a rebroadcast of... I used to do a series of music specials. Actually, I used to host a music show here on WBAI called DGM, which, of course, stands for Damn Good Music. And several times I did Christmas music specials. And I would delve into some of my favorite Christmas music. The musings you heard from Byron and myself earlier is a lot to say about the state of the world today. Hopefully it'll make you think about that. But I do hope that you enjoy the music, and there will be a lot of it. But prior to playing the music, I do want to play a few things for you. The first is an interview with Juan Antonio Barona and Patrick Ness, who are respectively the director and the screenwriter and novelist for a new film coming out on the 23rd called A Monster Calls. And basically, it's a story of a young boy who has to deal with the fact that his mother is dying of cancer and calls on a tree monster in a nearby graveyard to help him deal with it. It's really a powerful movie. It is pretty much everything the BFG, the Steven Spielberg film that came out earlier this year, is not. The monster is played, of course, by Liam Neeson. I'm going to play a brief preview of the movie and then my interview with Juan Antonio Barona and Patrick Ness, and I got a chance to speak to them about making a film like this, what storytelling means to them. And this is the time of year where, for most people, Christmas or Hanukkah or any of the holidays is really a time for family. Many people who are, let's just say, fans of Christmas or love the Christmas season, it's all about gift giving, and for the most part, you know, it's one of those things where you get to show the people you love that you care. This is a movie that deals with a lot of things and deals with something you really never get to see addressed in a family film, and then that is, how do we deal with death? How do we deal with the loss of a loved one, especially for a child, the loss of a parent, or knowing that a parent is dying? So it's a very powerful story. I highly recommend it. But I do want to say, you are tuned still to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI 99.5 FM. I'm going to ask that you become a BAI buddy in the name of Night Shift. You can go to our Facebook page, NITESHIFT, and right there, there's a link where you can just click, go to our page on the WBAI.org website, and become a BAI buddy. It's simple. It's like $10 a month. That's all you really have to do, and for the next year, we know then that you'll be supporting us. And ideally, if we can do this, if we can get you, if I can get a couple dozen people, if I can get a few people every week to become a BAI buddy, and all the shows here do that, we won't have to do marathons because we'll just be sustained. So that's essentially becoming a sustaining member, essentially subscribing to WBAI, subscribing to what you like about the station, about Night Shift, especially doing it during our show. So if you've done it someplace else, I ask you to do it on Night Shift. Go to WBAI.org, look for Night Shift, or just go to Facebook and click on it. But now, here's a little of A Monster Calls.
Hello, I'm Liam Neeson, and I'm very happy to share a preview of my new movie, A Monster Calls. Enjoy the preview.
Okay, are you ready? There we go. What color is that?
Brown.
Maybe if we take a pencil. And then we make a face. And then we see the life in the eyes. Life is always in the eyes. There's our monster.
How does the story begin?
With a boy. Too old to be a kid.
You're coming to live with me. Don't touch anything.
Too young to be a man.
I no longer see you.
What did he do?
He called for a monster. You, the truth that you hide, the truth you dream.
I'm sorry you have to face this, but you have to be brave. Do you understand?
What shall I destroy next?
Break the windows!
Break them yourself.
It's okay that you're angry. I'm angry too.
And if you need to break things, by God, you break them.
I wish I had 100 years. 100 years I could give to you. I'm afraid.
Of course you are afraid. But you will make it through. For this is why you called me. Come on.
I'm here with Juan Bayona and Patrick Ness, who are the creators behind A Monster Calls. First question is, are you really Juan, or is this Carlos pretending?
You will never know.
I will.
I can tell the difference.
My first question, this is a question I'm asked for both of you. When did you first know you wanted to be a storyteller?
I don't have a memory of the moment I decided to be a director. I knew I was obsessed with films when I was a kid. I was obsessed with drawing, but I know I always wanted to be a director. I don't have a memory of that.
And what about you? When did you first know you wanted to be a storyteller?
I always wanted to be a writer, but I didn't think it was possible. And that's one of the things I always, when I talk to like young writers, I always say, to me, a real writer doesn't write, they write anyway. So I didn't think you could make a living at it. I didn't think people from tiny, tiny towns and poor backgrounds like me ever published books. I wrote a book anyway. I didn't think anybody was going to film a script of mine. I wrote one anyway. So to me, it's not about writing, it's about writing anyway. Spite and defiance are excellent tools for a storyteller. So always, I just didn't think it was possible, but I did it anyway.
Okay. My second question is contextual like that, too. Stories have been part of every culture as long as time has been recorded. Why do you think we as human beings need story? What do you think the purpose of story is?
He's got a good answer for this. This is good.
I think fantasy, somehow we all need fantasy. It's a very important element in our learning about what life is about. I think somehow reality is about information, and I think knowledge deals more with fiction, with narrative, with fantasy. You know, I think we all need fantasy to understand reality.
Hmm. That is a good answer.
That's a good answer. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Now, what about you? Why do human beings tell stories?
I mean, I think for the same. Bono's thing is always, you know, the reality is in its own sense valueless. It simply is, and we have to tell a story to understand it and to live inside it. And I tend to think, my pet line is I always thought that sentience was an evolutionary accident. A good one. It benefited us hugely, but it came really suddenly, our awareness of death. You know, and I always said that we invented religion to deal with our fear of death, and we invented comedy to deal with our fear of life. And that's a glib way to put it, but the world is... the knowledge that we will not be here at some point demands a story to be told about it. And that stretches into all kinds of life. You know, how do you love in a universe like that? How do you laugh in a universe like that? And we found extremely effective ways, but we found them through stories.
Well, that's a great answer, too. Okay, my last contextual question before I get specifically to A Monster Calls is, in your estimation, what makes a good story and a story worth telling?
I think, for me, there are no good or bad stories. Are honest or no honest stories. You know, I think it's about to be honest, to find the truth. Somehow, the way Connor needs to find the truth in A Monster Calls, it's parallel. It's a parallelism of the work of the storyteller. He needs to find the truth. He needs to look inside. You need to look inside of yourself and try to find the truth of the story and express it in the most effective way.
No. I mean, it's, I wish I knew. I mean, because it would probably make writing a lot easier. But it's just I find something is nagging at me and is appealing to me, and then I feel that there is shape and color to be found in it, and I just sort of pursue it and hope that there's something there. And I only really realize what it's about when I'm done. So I mean, I think honesty is absolutely part of it. I think truth is a part of it, and it's I don't know why I respond to a story. But the ones that I have genuinely responded to, where I've set everything aside except what the story needs and what it needs to be told truthfully, those are the only ones that have worked. Everything else has just been guesswork.
And I think great art, it's truth that makes it resonate.
I think so. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, let's go with that. That's what he said.
All right, now I'm gonna go back to you, Patrick.
Okay.
So in the credits, you credit story by Siobhan.
Yep.
Tell me a little bit about where the story came from, what inspired you to want to write.
Yeah, no problem. It's an unusual place, particularly for novelists, because novels are never collaborative. That's the great thing about them. I don't have to answer to anybody. but she wrote four really terrific novels for teenagers, really sparky, mischievous, really quality stuff. She wrote them all knowing that she had cancer. She knew that it was terminal. A Monster Calls, or a version of A Monster Calls, she intended to be her fifth book. But she had barely begun. She had 1,000 first drafty words of her first chapter and a structural idea about storytelling, and then she died before she expected to. And we showed an editor at the time, and the editor brought it to me and said, I don't want this idea to vanish, because I think it's a good idea and I really love Siobhan and love her work. Would you consider turning it into a novel? And I first demurred because I thought I didn't want to write a tribute. I didn't want to write a memorial, mostly because that's not what Siobhan Dowd would have done. And the worst result is you write a bad book. You write a boring bad book that is very polite and respectful. That's not which kind of writer she was. But it, though small, it was so potent that I immediately started. The very first idea I got another idea, and that's what you want any idea to do. And the idea I got was Connor coming out of the second tale to discover he destroyed the sitting room. And I thought, that's it. That's the book. That's the fulcrum of the book. Everything rests on that. There's his anger, the transgression of the action. It's the scene where he begins to change. I thought, okay, there is real power here. And so when an idea takes off, you just got to follow it wherever it goes. So yeah, a very, very unusual place to start a novel, but a really interesting experience, really good.
All right, so my question for you, Juan, is now, how did you come to this material? What did you respond to about it? And what did you think you, as a filmmaker, could bring to it?
Well, every time I made myself that same question every time I respond to anything in such an emotional way. I always try to find out what is behind that creates that strong impact on me. So it was the same with Monster Calls. But at the same time, I thought that it was a fantasy. I love fantasy, and this, you know, is so rare to find nowadays material dealing with fantasy and emotion, and with so much respect to the world of kids. So extraordinary the way Patrick portrays the complexities of the psychology of a kid. I thought that was very, very rare. It reminded me a lot of movies I saw when I was a kid, and I wanted to do one of those films. So I immediately started to try to find out how to put the story on the screen, because it was not that easy, you know.
Wow. Well, now there's another question for you. And again, you started to alert. What was the most difficult part about making this film, and what's been the most rewarding so far?
I think finding the tone, because we were doing scenes, very intimate scenes with the mother and the kid, and the next one would be an epic animation with fairy tale characters, you know. Finding the tone, finding the architecture, it was very, very challenging.
And the most rewarding part so far?
I think the most rewarding is when you see the film with an audience, because the energy in the room is so special. I think that it's not just how emotional it is. It's, I think, the fact that it's such a thought-provoking film that stays with the audience once the film finishes. It's very rewarding to be in the room seeing the film with more people.
Sure. Now, my question, you have to pretend he's not here when I ask you this. What was it like working with Juan? And he's such a visual, such an imaginative director, and I kind of feel he could do anything. What was it like working with him, and what was the best part of collaborating? Because like you said, being a novelist, nobody tells you what to do. Nobody can say, cut this.
Can you do anything?
I'll pretend I'm not in the room. Sorry.
Romantic comedy? Can you do like a Western musical?
Yeah, I think we should do a gay Western musical.
I would love that.
Yeah.
Can we, Chris Pratt?
Animated.
with animation.
I wrote the script. I wrote it on spec, and I didn't have anybody. I did that on purpose because I wanted to try and start the conversation about what I felt was important. So, because I feared that there were things that could be changed to make it less good and less truthful. And then I was hoping, you know, there was a risk to see if a filmmaker would respond. And when Bun responded, it was there were two things in particular that felt really, really right, which about the orphanage and the impossible. One of which was the seriousness with which he takes, and I take in my books, the point of view of a child, of a young person or a teenager. And there's a seriousness and respect to it. And it's something I always wanted as a teenager and never got in books. Rarely, and so definitely that, and because it had to be Connor's story. It couldn't be Connor standing there while everybody did stuff. And the second was just as important. It was a kind of, I have a theory that there's no such thing as a realistic story. Everything is a fantasy, even if it's contemporary New York. Characters are still arcing towards their destinies. It's still coincidences. It begins, it ends.
You know? You mean reality TV is not real?
Fine line, but I think that's even less real than fiction. And if I can accept that, then letting genre stuff leak together is easier, because it's all fantasy in a way, so the tonal shifts are easier to do. And the story makes perfect sense to me. And in The Impossible, The Orphanage took horror elements and used them for emotional stuff, took thriller elements in The Impossible and used it for emotional, you know, gain. And this is fantastic material used for emotional gain. I thought, that's perfect. That's how I see stories. And this slippage, which isn't really slippage, it's all part of the same cloth, that's what it really needs. And so that's why we were a good match. And then we just started talking, and it really was really fruitful. It wasn't adversarial. Nobody was trying to impose a vision. It just was, how can we do this in the best way? And here's a bunch of good ideas. How can we do them? And they came from everybody. It was really, really, I was very lucky. Let's go ask some questions. Yeah.
Well, you know, you guys are great because you're answering questions I would have asked you anyway. So for you, he alluded to something else I wanted to ask you about, and that's working with, you have a great eye for young talent. You know, everybody now knows Tom Holland's fantastic. But what is the difference, or how is it, or why is it you feel you can able get such great performances from children? Is it because you're a child at heart, or do you understand them differently, or?
I don't treat the kids as different as differently as the other actors in the room. I think it's a question of dedicate the time that they need, that they deserve for the performance. Make them feel how important is what they're doing. I think they need to wake up every day at 6 o'clock in the morning, exactly the same way the other actors do. So I don't see the point in treating them differently. I think it's a question of make them understand the character, make them understand how important is what we're doing, and try to nurture them, to feed them, and to create the environment. Not pushing them that much. I think it's a question of also leaving them the freedom to bring their own stuff to the film. I think the way that the kids they perform, it's always very real, very organic, very naturalistic. But it's a question of energy and respect.
Okay. Well, this book deals with, and this movie deals with a lot of themes that are very important, some that you've never seen in a family film before. Mm-hmm. Part of it is just dealing with death, or, you know, the fact that someone you love is going to die, or loss. Mm-hmm. What were some of the themes that you felt were most important? Because very often you have to let certain things from a novel go, or emphasize certain things. Perhaps the relationship with the mother and the son could have been more emphasized or de-emphasized. Mm-hmm. So what were the themes that struck you most that had to be there?
I think for me, the idea that articulates the story in A Monster Calls is the truth. That's the concept that articulates the story, and how we need to find the truth and express the truth. And it's... it's such a great subject matter, especially so relevant nowadays when we live in a society that it seems that the truth matters less and less. And I think that talking about the truth, how it's important to define the truth and express the truth, defend the truth, is a beautiful concept.
Now, for you, you know, you mentioned that the writer, I have to assume you were close.
Never met her.
Oh, you never met her. Yeah. Okay, well, that's even wilder to me. So, but knowing the legacy of this writer, like you said, having that in your hands, but also putting a child at the center of a story like this, and it's been said that you can't truly live until you learn how to deal with death. Mm. What themes were the most important for you to see come through in a movie? Because you wrote the screenplay after.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, kids. The thing I'd like people to take away, I mean, I don't like people to take away messages, I think you end up writing a sermon otherwise, but if people do take away something, I would, you know, the fact that kids know more than we'd like them to is, that's just a fact. And the idea that they shouldn't, quote-unquote shouldn't, is damaging, because shouldn't ends the conversation without changing anything. And what Connor is desperate for is a kind of acknowledgement that he is thinking a serious thing, that he is thinking about a serious thing, and he knows what's going to happen. Nobody will meet him halfway. And he, as a kid, he doesn't think that he's supposed to, because he doesn't quite know how to reach out to do. He can't articulate it. He needs somebody to do it for him, so the monster does. And that to me is the really important thing, because I think it's the trouble we all get ourselves into about I don't know, what I wanted as a kid, I think I said this, but what I wanted as a kid was to be taken that seriously in a way, not indulged, but it felt, there's a burning sense of injustice in young people because you are treated as a child or an adult depending on the convenience of the person treating you. And that's real, there's a real injustice there, and some of it is quite fair, you know, to feel that. And so it's, to me, that was the important thing, they know more than we'd like them to know. And to say that they shouldn't is unhelpful. And so all he really wants is to say, yeah, this isn't going to have a happy ending, and I'm sorry, and it is going to be hard, but you're not going to be alone. You know, we'll do it for you. I've been through it. You know, you don't need to pretend to feel any other way than how you actually feel. And to me, that's what it's about. And that's, he turns to the monster near the end. He says, you'll stay. It's all he wants. Kids know. They know. I mean, you know, I've seen those articles about how do we talk to our kids about Trump. I think it's kids worry. Kids know. They know something's up.
I worry.
Yeah, exactly. So acknowledge, they don't, but they don't want to tell you their word because they don't want to worry you. They're quite considerate kids. It's weird. And so just to say, yeah, I know. I know this is an anxious time. And yeah, sometimes the bad guys seem to win. But there's more. There's always more. There's always, 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 always more. You know, and so that's what if people take away anything, I would like to be that.
And that was an interview with Juan Antonio Barona and Patrick Ness, who are the director and screenwriter of A Monster Calls, which hits theaters on December 23rd, select theaters on December 23rd, and then opens wide on January 6th. I highly recommend it. It's definitely a powerful, moving film. It's about a little boy, as you heard, who learns to come to grips with the fact that his mother is dying of cancer. It's touching, it's moving. And like I said, it's everything the BFG, the Spielberg film from earlier this year, the BFG is being the big friendly giant, was not. Next, I'm going to go to our Night Shift Christmas music special. And that means for the next 2 hours, you're going to be listening to what I think are some of the greatest Christmas music. But again, I want you to remember to pledge for WBAI for Night Shift, and specifically become a BAI buddy, which is the simplest thing to do. It's only $10 a month. What you do, go to our Facebook page right now, NITESHIFT, and just click on the link. There's a link there that'll take you to the WBAI.org page, and at the bottom of the page that tells you all about Night Shift, you can click and become a BAI buddy, but you have to do it in the name of Night Shift for it to be counted for our show. I'd rather do it this way than sit here and pitch throughout the whole show or do all the pitching we normally do. I want you to sit back, and maybe you might want to record this, because this is going to be nonstop. I'm going to play you an hour of music from a show I did a couple years back, it was a DGM Christmas music special back when I was doing DGM as a separate music show in the mornings. So you'll hear me talking as if it's the morning music show, but this is actually Night Shift, and it's our Night Shift Christmas music special. So please sit back and enjoy. And if you're up late, hopefully you are, you're listening. This is the great kind of music to put up your tree to wrap presents to, all of that. And if you enjoy Christmas music, I think you will really enjoy this. It's 6 a.m., and good morning, and Merry Christmas. I'm Mike Sargent, and you are tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI 99.5 FM. Normally, when I'm on this early in the morning, it's because I'm playing music to you. I call it damn good music. And that's what I'm going to do for you this Christmas morning. And it's up to you to guess what the theme of that damn good music will be. Here, Christmas morning. And Christmas time is, for better or for worse, the time when you hear a lot of Christmas music. And hopefully most people have their favorite Christmas songs, whether you're Christian or Jewish or Muslim or otherwise. And whether or not the meaning of the music has meaning to you, you may just like this music, whether it's more religious themed or if it's more frivolous, like Jingle Bells or Have a Holly Jolly Christmas. And everybody has their favorites. My particular favorite is the piece that you were listening to. It's called Carol of the Bells. The version you were just hearing is from the movie Home Alone. It's actually conducted and orchestrated by John Williams, the famous film composer who did Star Wars, Jaws, Raiders of the Lost Ark, and countless other films and many, many Oscars. Carol of the Bells, also known as the Ukrainian Bell Carol, is a choral miniature work originally composed by the Ukrainian composer Mykola Leontovich. Throughout the composition, Leontovich uses a four-note motif as an ostinato figure. This ostinato figure is an ancient pagan Ukrainian New Year's, originally celebrated in April, chant known in Ukrainian as Shedrik, the Generous One. Leontovich originally created the piece as an assignment for a harmony course he was taking by correspondence to demonstrate the use of ostinato. The original work was intended to be sung a cappella by mixed choir. Two other variants of the composition, one for women's choir and one for children's choir with piano accompaniment, were also created by the composer. The placement of the linguistic accents in the original Ukrainian text of the chant also employ a device known as hemolia, or hemiola. I pronounce that correctly. Although most recordings neglect to incorporate the change of accents into their performance. Carol of the Bells first premiered in December 1916, performed by a student choral group at Kiev University. It was introduced to Western audiences by the Ukrainian National Chorus during its concert tour of Europe and the Americas, where it premiered in the United States on October 5, 1921, right here in New York at Carnegie Hall. It was adapted into English by Peter Wilkowski in the 1930s and is performed and sung worldwide during the Christmas season. An alternate English version, Ring Christmas Bells, featuring more nativity-based lyrics, written by Mina Louise Homan in 1947, is also very common. So I'm going to play to you a few versions of Carol of the Bells, maybe three or four. The greatest thing about Christmas carols and Christmas music is that, like classical music, it can be performed and interpreted and arranged so many different ways. So when you hear these different versions, they're all the same piece. They all take on a different personality while embodying the essence and the originality of Mykola Leontovich's work, Carol of the Bells. So here we are. This first version I'll play to you is by Al Di Meola. Thank you.
Thank you.
The last two versions you just heard of Carol of the Bells, first was you heard Bare Naked Ladies, and then you heard Celestial Winds all doing Carol of the Bells. Just before that, of course, was Al Di Meola. Next, I'm going to play some very interesting versions of some songs you may or may not know pretty well. Of course, this one is called Do You Hear What I Hear? And this is by the great Patti LaBelle. After that, I'll play a few more things that should be familiar, and you tell me what they are.
Said the night wind to the little lad, do you see what I see? Way up in the sky, little lad, do you see what I see? A star. A tail as big as a kite, with a tail as big as a kite. Mm-hmm. Said the little lamb to the shepherd boy, shepherd boy, do you hear what I hear? A song, high above the trees, with a voice as big as the child.
All right, that was a lot of Christmas music. First you heard Do You Hear What I Hear by the great Patti LaBelle. Then a very interesting version of God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen by Shack Attack. Then I'll Be Home for Christmas by B.B. King. Then a great version of Little Drummer Boy by Take Six. And then I offset with another version of Little Drummer Boy by Aaron Lordson. And I'll come back to have another version of Little Drummer Boy after what I play you next. But next up, I'm going to play, this is an interesting Christmas song you may have never heard. This is from the soundtrack, believe it or not, of a James Bond movie. It's a James Bond movie called On Her Majesty's Secret Service, which in my opinion probably would have been the best Bond movie if Sean Connery actually had been in it. The composer is John Barry, who did all the greatest greatest James Bond scores and the James Bond theme and whatnot. And it's called Do You Know How Christmas Trees Are Made? And it brings back a lot of memories to me because, you know, I heard the song when I was a kid. And so I think it's a great song. Then after that, I'm going to go to, a few more Christmas surprises.
Christmas trees are grown. They need sunshine. Sunshine can't grow Christmas trees alone. They need raindrops. Raindrops can't grow Christmas trees. Here's the reason why. In the winter, rain will freeze and the trees will die.
Do you know how Christmas trees are grown? They need
around. He needs snowflakes. Snowflakes cannot do it all, I found. He needs reindeer. Reindeer, even though they try, they need other things. Once a year they have to fly, and they don't have wings.
Do you know how Santa gets around?
Cards are made, they need pictures. Pictures can't complete them, I'm afraid. They need greetings. Greetings say what's in your heart, that's what they are for. But when loved ones are apart, Christmas cards need more.
Gone away is the bluebird, but here to stay.
And that was another version of Carol of the Bells. That was from a New Age album called Christmas Dreams from 2002. It's considered chill out New Age. Interesting time, the 80s into the early 90s. New Age really brought along a lot of great acoustic composers and musicians who did a lot of Christmas albums and Christmas music and what was at the time called New Age music, which today would be considered chill out, and some of it electronica if it was electronic influenced and not just acoustic. And a lot of great music came out of that time period, mostly from a label called Wyndham Hill, and Hearts of Space and a few other labels came up at that time. And so it's part of the history of music and Christmas music. And before that we heard Do You Know How Christmas Trees Are Made, from the soundtrack to On Her Majesty's Secret Service, something you don't expect to hear. A really interesting version of Winter Wonderland by the Isley Brothers. And then, of course, Burl Ives singing Holly Jolly Christmas, which, if you're any kind of child, you'd remember from the Rankin Bass, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. And it's a classic piece. And you are tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI 99.5. FM in New York and on the web at WBAI.org. It's Christmas morning. I hope you're in and someplace warm and with loved ones, or maybe if you're parents, you're waiting for your children to wake up, or maybe they're already up, and hopefully enjoying this music and this morning. And you're still tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI, 99.5 FM in New York and on the web at WBAI.org. This has been Night Shift. We're still listening to a Night Shift DGM, Christmas DGM music special. I've been playing Christmas music special that I did a couple years ago, where I play some of what I think is the greatest Christmas music. Just music, and you heard Carol of the Bells and a number of other great pieces of Christmas music, and some of my favorite pieces of music, and I give you some history of some of these great Christmas carols and hymns that we've heard, that even if you don't celebrate Christmas, hopefully you're loving the music, and hopefully you enjoy Night Shift because of the diversity of programming that we give you here on WBAI and the diversity of programming you get here on Night Shift. So, to show your support, please become a WBAI buddy. In the name of Night Shift. And the way to do that is you can go online right now. Just go to Facebook. You can like us, NITESHIFT. But if you're enjoying this music, hopefully you've been recording it or just sitting back and going, wow, all this great Christmas music that I like, that I've heard, that I haven't heard, versions of songs I haven't heard. And just go, NITESHIFT. And on the Facebook page is a link where you can just click, takes you to the WBAI.org website. And right on the page that tells you all about Night Shift at the bottom, you can become a WBAI buddy in the name of Night Shift. For $10 a month, become a BAI buddy. That way we're sustained. We're knowing that you're going to, just like everything else in life that you subscribe to, whether it's your cable or your internet or anything that you really need in your life, electricity, water, heat, gas, WBAI, you should think of us as that kind of essential utility in your life. And hopefully Night Shift is essential in your life as well. If you're up late and you're driving around or you're not near your computer right now, just remember to go to Facebook and pledge. Become a WBAI buddy on Night Shift. Just go to NITESHIFT on Facebook, like us, and click on the link and become a BAI buddy. Here's some more, hopefully, great to you, Christmas DGM, which of course stands for Damn Good Music.
And no Christmas show would be complete, in my opinion, Christmas music program would be complete without playing some music from both Charlie Brown Christmas by the great Vince Guaraldi and without the Jackson 5. The Jackson 5's album, the Christmas album, I remember as a child having, and I could tell you all the sounds and all the instrumentation by heart, which dates me a little bit. But I'm going to play some tracks from Charlie Brown Christmas, the Jackson 5, Leon Redbone, and the Yellow Jackets. Thank you.
birthday, the snowman was a jolly happy soul, with a corncob pipe and a button nose and two eyes made out of coal. Frosty the Snowman is a fairy tale, they say. He was made of snow, but the children know how he came to life one day.
There must have been some magic in that old sugar hat they found, but when they placed it on his head, he began to dance around.
Frosty the Snowman was alive as he could be, and the children say he could laugh and play just the same as you and me. Thumpity, thump, thump, thumpity, thump, 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 thump.
Frosty the Snowman knew the sun was a hot that day, so he said, let's run and we'll have some fun out before I melt away.
Down to the village with a broomstick in his hand, running here and there all around the square, saying, catch me if you can. He led them down the streets of town, right through that traffic cop.
And he only paused in a moment when he heard a hymn of holler style.
Frosty the Snowman had to hurry on his way,
but he waved goodbye saying, don't you cry, I'll be back again someday. A thump a thump a thump thump a thump a thump.
Look at Frosty go.
Thump a thump a thump thump a thump a thump.
Over the hills of snow.
And that was the Yellow Jackets doing their version of God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen. Before that, we heard Leon Redbone doing Frosty the Snowman. Before that, Jackson 5 doing Little Drummer Boy. And we heard two tracks from Charlie Brown Christmas. Next, I'm going to go back to play you another version of Carol of the Bells, this time by John Tesh, and then another version by Durbin Elf. After that, I'm going to move on to let you hear two versions of Greensleeves, once by Vince Giraldi from the Charlie Brown Christmas, another one by a famous harpist named Georgia Kelly, who was part of that movement I was telling you about of New Age Christmas music from the early 90s.
Thank you.
next, I'm going to play something very, very interesting. This is Alleluia, and it's a rhythmic preface to Mass, and this is sung in Latin and Swahili with some African elements. It's from an album called Mass, Voices of the World by Charles Bernstein. Probably not like anything you've ever heard. And after that, I'll play a couple more surprises for you here on Listener Sponsored Radio, WBAI. I'm Mike Sargent, and this is the WBAI Morning Music Show. I call it DGM, which stands for Damn Good Music, and whether we're playing Christmas music or any other kind of music here, when I do this on Wednesdays from 10 to noon, hopefully it's damn good music to you too.
Chipmunks, ready to sing your song?
I'll say the darn. Yeah, let's sing it now.
Okay, Simon.
Okay.
Okay, Theodore.
Okay.
Okay, Alvin. Alvin. Alvin! Okay, fellas, get ready. That was very good, Simon.
Naturally.
Very good, Theodore. Alvin, you were a little flat. Watch it. from an Alvin book. Alvin. Let's not overdo it. Now, wait a minute, boys. Alvin, cut that. Now, wait. Theodore, just a minute. Simon, will you cut that out? Get off.
As I said, certain Christmas music shows could not be complete without certain pieces of music. And, of course, the Chipmunk song, in my opinion, is one of them. And I think that needs no introduction. If you don't know who the Chipmunks are and you've never heard this before, well, then there it is. But next up, let me not forget to mention that what you heard, that very interesting version of Carol of the Bells, was by a group called Crystal Method, and that was their version of Carol of the Bells. And I'm going to end with a very, very nice jazz interpretation of Carol of the Bells, and I'll be back just before the end here to say Feliz Navidad. Well, I am Mike Sargent, and this has been the WBAI Morning Music Show. I call it DGM, Damn Good Music, and I hope you've enjoyed all these Christmas songs that I've heard to you. I hope you've heard some things you've never heard before and that you've enjoyed it. And I hope you enjoyed hearing these different versions and different variations of different Christmas songs, especially my clear favorite, Carol of the Bells. Until next time, you're tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI 99.5 FM, and on the web at WBAI.org. I'm Mike Sargent, and again, Feliz Navidad.
Santa Claus did not. No, sir. Hotel, I'm singing, I'm a part. True, sir. Yo! Are you thinking it light? Shout it. Hey, jingle bells and sing. Won't you put me in a spin? Cause I got my head screwed on right. Hey, now all I really want for Christmas is just to be a little bit more conscious. I don't really ever look expensive and dear. Hey, Shannon, do you really wanna deal in Kwanzaa? I'm the ragamuffin in a debt differently. So, have a happy new year. Hey, no, I am not ill-ill-ill-ill. Yes, I am just chillin'-ill-ill-ill. So, won't eat your turkey and rice. Hey, Shannon. While you're celebrating, let me ask you one thing. Why you wanna act just a surprise? Hey, all I really want for Christmas is just to be a little bit more conscious. I don't really ever look expensive and dear. No, no. Do you really wanna deal in Kwanzaa? I'm a ragamuffin in a debt differently.
Hopefully you've enjoyed this. This has been Night Shift. I'm Mike Sargent. We'll be back next week. Actually, we'll be starting an hour later next week. So we go on at 1 o'clock next week. It'll be a slightly different show. But Night Shift will be here. And if you enjoy this show, if you've enjoyed this music for the last two, over almost 3 hours now, then please become a WBAI buddy. Just go onto Facebook right now, NITESHIFT, Night Shift. Go to our page there. You can like us, but more importantly, you can click on a link right there on the page that will take you to the Night Shift page on WBAI.org. And then you can, at the bottom of that page, you'll see there's a button where you can click and become a WBAI buddy in the name of Night Shift. Hopefully you've enjoyed the show.
T minus 10 seconds, counting.
What a sad situation.
Lift off.
2016.
It was the best of times.
2016 world champions, Cleveland, Ohio.
It was the worst of times.
North Carolina is one of the top races to watch in this election.
Hey, everybody, get off of the street. Donald Trump. Get off the street.
Winter is coming.
The war is coming to an end.
Wherever we looked, the world was changing so fast that nothing of importance seemed to be happening.
Come with me.
Is this the bus to the underworld?
Tune in for a shortcut.
2016.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
11 p.m. New Year's Eve, right here on WBAI-FM.
Wait for the history.
And it's a little bit sad.
Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost.
Johnny the Conman did a job election day, telling old white men they'd be great again if they'd let him have his way. But soon they'll see how tragically he played them all for fools.
A crowd surrounds Gays Against Guns at a holiday market in New York City, delighted by the caroling but concerned about the Trump presidency, about how he normalized hate speech and how the man who said he'd drain the swamp is filling his cabinet with robber barons, billionaires, climate change deniers, racists, anti-immigrant, Islamophobic, anti-choice nominees.
Says there is no climate change. It's a Chinese plot. It's not getting hot. He's totally deranged. Gay, black, or Muslim, say goodbye to.
It's an unprecedented political environment where Trump and his nominees need to be held accountable, where local action and local stations like WBAI are needed. A radio station like ours is non-commercial, non-corporate, listener-sponsored. Become a member. Now's the time to strengthen WBAI. Phone our pledge line, 516-620-3602. Make a pledge, become a member, and thank you.
Merry Christmas, pretty baby. You sure did treat me nice.
My name is Dan Ingram, and I'm a WBAI fan. They've always been, you know, the station that kicked butt and the station that said what you're not supposed to say because the people in power don't want to hear it. And I love that. I have to celebrate you.